Welcome back to the KGNC Agribusiness News Hour. I'm Shannon Gray, and this morning we're talking with Bill Day.
He is a regional director for the Texas Wine Grape Growers Association. And Bill, thanks for being with us this morning.
I'm very pleased to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, wine is a big part of the Texas economy. I mean, I travel to Fredericksburg and, you know, as much as I can to hang out, enjoy the scenery, Texas, the wine, the whole nine. And it's been an interesting year. So I thought it was appropriate to have y'all on, represent that part of our economy. And just to start things off, tell us a little bit about the Texas Wine Grape Growers Association and what your mission is, when what y'all just kind of do.
The Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association has been around for quite a long time. A statement that is frequently made among those who have been in the organization since inception is that we all stand on the shoulders of those giants who have gone before us. It's an effort that's been in existence in excess of 40 years. It wasn't until Texas state legislature changes occurred, I believe about 2005, that sort of broke open the modern wine industry in Texas. We are very happy to have the support of several Texas legislators, and we thank them for their efforts on our behalf. At this point in time, the wine industry and the associated vineyards in Texas generate in excess of $2 billion, that's with a B, in total gross revenues to the state. Wow. Now, that's not tax dollars, but that's the economic impact. It's for a relatively new and small industry, it makes a big impact.
See, and I had a feeling you were going to say something like that. I mean, because heck, I live in Texas and I even tour, you know, different parts of Texas. And one of the benefits is just it also being wine country, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you, so where are you located exactly?
All right. So Buenos Huerte Vineyards is located on the high plains of Texas, southwest of Lubbock, about 45 miles. We're in northwest Terry County. Back, I believe, in 2015, the state legislature designated Terry County as the grape-growing capital of Texas. And so even though there are not that many wineries up on the High Plains, the wineries are located down in the Texas Hill Country because, well, that's where the people are. Mm-hmm. But the Texas High Plains have a very good growing set of conditions for grapes. It's high and dry. The combination of the low humidity, which is a very good thing for grapes because mold, mildew, and fungus are enemies of growing grapes. So with our, you know, average humidity of 15 or 20%, that puts us in a good spot. There's some argument on this, but somewhere between 80 and 85% of all the grapes grown in Texas are grown on the High Plains.
Yeah, that blows my mind. I knew that there was a push, right? I feel like grapes are becoming more prevalent in this area, but I had no idea that it had been for actually a lot longer than I originally thought.
Well, so Texas Tech actually kicked off the modern wine industry back in the 70s. The Board of Regents went to their professors and said, you have to publish, and to publish, you have to do research. Mm. And several of the early giants, and I'm sorry that I can't name them all. I should know this. Doc McPherson was one of several. Okay. Those early giants literally got together and said, well, you know, we got to do some research. What do you want to do? Well, I like to drink wine. Let's see if we can grow grapes up here. And so literally in their backyards, they planted grapevines and discovered that, well, lo and behold, the growing conditions up here were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And there was a big push that occurred in the late 70s. followed by an enormous amount of planting, initially around Lubbock, because of proximity to Texas Tech. Then in the early 90s, there was a problem with some economics, and a couple of the big wineries went broke. And when they did, that made a mess with the vineyards who depended on the wineries being in business to sell their grapes. And unfortunately, a lot of those early vineyards were ripped out and put back into cotton farming.
Okay.
What really happened since then was that some of the farmers in the area of Terry County watched that unfortunate issue, and they decided to get into it in a little different way. So instead of planting 100 acres of grapes, they planted 3 or 5 or 7,
mm-hmm.
and they learned slowly and diligently what they needed to do to take care of grapes. Grape growing is radically different from cotton farming. You cannot use the same equipment. You can try, but it's very difficult. Grapes require a ongoing effort because, let's say you have a year where there's little or no fruit because of a hail or a freeze or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you still have to take care of those vines just like they were producing. So it's a much higher commitment to the effort. It's like growing pecans.
Yeah.
You don't let your pecans die because one year they didn't produce anything. You keep watering and fertilizing and spraying for bugs and, you know, all the things that you have to do. Unlike a cotton farm, where if you have a dry year, you just don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you can't do that with grapes.
Yeah.
The other huge positive to grapes is that on a per acre basis, they can gross a tremendously high return. You know, on cotton, if you hit a 4-bale crop and it's $300 a bale, you're looking at $1,200 gross. That's wonderful. And mm-hmm. if you're farming 20,000 acres, that's great too.
Right.
But an acre of grapes can gross 10,000.
Wow.
It also costs a whole lot more to put it in than an acre of cotton. So there, you know, there's a distinctive trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
I know I grew up farming cotton over in New Mexico, close to Roswell.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is my background. Mm-hmm. It's not what I did for my professional career. I did that in Houston. But I always wanted to get back into farming. I was determined to get back into farming in something that was actually profitable.
A lot of the guys that I talk to, like wheat, for example, I've had somebody tell me, like, you know, I've been growing wheat for 40 years, and I hate to tell you this, Shannon, but I'm still getting the same price today as I was 40 years ago, you know? And
yeah.
And as you said, it's really what works for the individual, right? You know, if growing wheat works for somebody, that's awesome. We need wheat producers, but we also need grape growers, and why not, right? I was going to ask you, actually, because I feel like everyone I've spoken to that grows grapes, they say, well, I just really liked wine, and it was a hobby, and then it just turned into this thing now. Like, is that your story?
50 acres of grapes is not a hobby. It is a for-profit commercial operation.
Okay.
I spent my business career in finance and financial planning. And so I'm a planner by nature. I spend hours on spreadsheets making sure that at least it makes sense to even begin the effort. That does not mean that spreadsheets work out, because it is farming, it is nature, and you know, hail and late freezes can really mess with your spreadsheets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not for the faint of heart. Just like any kind of farming is not for the faint of heart. You got to be determined. You got to have the ability to hang in there through the bad years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and along with that, I mean, that was a really great segue, because the big thing I wanted to talk to you about today really is the year of 2020, all of this COVID, and you mentioned that number 2 billion dollars gross return just in the Texas wine industry for our state alone.
Yeah.
What has the impact been? Have you been able to weigh that yet in 2020, you know, with the shutting down of wineries and that sort of thing?
So unfortunately, we do have a strong feel for what's going on here. The issue is that it's all a trickle-down effect. Imagine that that you're a wheat farmer or a cotton farmer, and your biggest buyer is China, and China decides they don't want it. Well, okay. In a different way, that's what's happened to the wineries out there, because the governor shut them down in concert with all the bars. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm going to make a statement here which some people will disagree with. A wine tasting is radically different from a bar experience. In a bar, it's typically crowded. You're standing, you know, shoulder to shoulder. You're maybe dancing and drinking, having your great time. That's not to say that a wine tasting is not fun, but it's quite different. You sit down at a table with some close friends, mm-hmm. and you taste several wines. And you talk about them. You decide, I really like this one, or that one really isn't quite for me. And it's much more of an experience that's focused on not the raw enjoyment per se, but more of an ethereal approach to life, if you will. I'm not trying to be a snob or anything. I grew up on a farm. I wouldn't call myself a snob, okay? But I do have a learned appreciation for the tremendous things that wine can bring. I'm reminded of a quote by Benjamin Franklin. And his quote went something like this: in beer, there is friendship. In wine, there is wisdom. In water, there's bacteria. So I like to turn water into wisdom, and that's what we try to do.
Yeah, no, it's really been, it's something that we've even kept up with the Bar Owners Association here in the Amarillo area. They've been very vocal about the idea of, okay, certain businesses are being shut down, others are not. As you said, there are similarities, but there are also a lot of differences. There are a lot of nuances when we talk about business and how they're run, how they operate. And this is a really great example of that, where they're both being lumped into the same category, but they operate in a very different way.
Yeah, they operate in a very different way. And I'm not, please don't believe that I am criticizing bars. I enjoy a good drink just like anybody else. There is a very different, if you go to almost any winery, whether it's in the Fredericksburg area or it's somewhere else, you're likely to discover that there are a big difference. Most winery tasting rooms are spread out inherently. Mm-hmm. They're not jammed together. Many times they're set on the porch in a very beautiful scenic vista to add some pleasure to the tasting experience. A little factoid about the Texas Hill Country. We all know that the number one agrotourism destination in America is Napa Valley. Know what the number two destination is?
I don't.
Texas Hill Country.
Really?
The Texas Hill Country wine experience draws the second number of agrotourism visitors in the United States. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, Bill, I mean, as you said, the cost to even put in grape production is more than maybe some other crops. Then you factor in wine isn't just ready to go the second you produce it. It's actually got to sit around for a little bit and go through a specific process. You know, it's not immediate gratification. You aren't just selling it the next day, you know. What has been done in 2020, especially during COVID, to help offset those costs and those challenges?
Things that the Texas Wine Grape Growers Association was able to do in concert with the governor's office and the Texas Alcohol Beverage Commission, TABC, was to utilize the 51% section of the TABC rules, which says if we generate more than 51% of the gross revenues at a tasting room from anything other than sale of wine, that the rules changed and you were able to open like a restaurant is open with a lower capacity, but you were at least able to open. And that 51% did not include takeaway bottles that were unopened. So if I bought a case of wine, that didn't count towards the 51%. That was outside of the calculation. And so if I bought a charcuterie tray at a winery and along with that paid for a tasting of several wines, then that all worked together and many wineries were able to do that. Unfortunately, not everybody was able to make that transition. Mm-hmm. So there are some wineries that have been just shut out of this whole deal and are frankly in dire economic straits.
Well, with the CFAP program, y'all are finally included in the second round. How beneficial is that going to be for the wine industry in Texas?
Well, it definitely helps out the grape growers. I'm not sure that it does much for the wineries unless they too also grow grapes. And many of them do. Many of them have their own wineries either at their location or somewhere close by. But others really don't have any significant vineyards associated with them because, as I said earlier, the majority of the grapes are actually grown up on the high plains. Mm. So it's helped the vineyards, but it hasn't helped the wineries. There's been some SBA loans that were made available early on that I understand wineries were able to access as well. But CFAP was really directed more towards the growers.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Well, Bill, that was all of my questions. Did you have anything else you wanted to add today?
You know, the only thing I would like to add is a great thank you to all of the folks that have visited wineries across the state of Texas. I know that I speak for the entire organization when I say that without the people that come to experience and enjoy wine in Texas, we would not be able to exist. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and we hope that you come see us again soon.
Again, that's Bill Day with the Texas Wine Grape Growers Association. He also runs Buena Suerte Vineyards in Terry County. That's really close to us, y'all. So if you have a chance, go out there, support local businesses. And we'll keep in touch with TWGGA as the year progresses and as COVID, you know, runs its course. For KGNC Agribusiness News, I'm Shannon Gray.